Coming up next, Real Israel Talk Radio, Program 21, Episode 107.
Yeshua and his disciples did not submit to the Pharisaic authorities of Jerusalem. Furthermore, Yeshua and his disciples did not even submit to the high priestly judges among the Sadducees. Yeshua's run-ins with the Kohanim, or the temple priests of his day, was simply because he did not consider them legitimate. Welcome back to Real Israel Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us here again today. I'm Avi Ben-Mordechai. Today I would like to continue to have a look at some additional New Covenant texts and narratives demonstrating to me that Yeshua and his disciples observed and taught the principles of the House of Tzedok 364-day solar calendar. Now, based on my research, it is my personal understanding that Yeshua and his disciples did not submit to the Pharisaic authorities of Jerusalem, nor to their Sanhedrin. Yeshua and his disciples considered them as those who appointed themselves to be over all of Israel as teachers and interpreters of the Mosaic written law, collectively referred to as the Torah. Furthermore, Yeshua and his disciples did not acknowledge nor submit to Jerusalem's high priestly judges amongst the Sadducees, which included the high priests of the House of Katros and the House of Baitus, also referred to as the Bothusians. Now, these Second Temple priests were considered usurpers of the true Yehovah-ordained priesthood authority of Tzedok, coming down in the family line of Aaron, brother of Moses. Yeshua's run-ins with the Kohanim, or the temple priests of his day, was simply because he did not consider them legitimate. On my previous program, Real Israel Talk Radio, episode 106 and part 10, in this Dead Sea Scrolls Qumran House of Tzedok series, we studied the following points. Point number one, Acts chapter 20, verse 6. Now we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. We learned that Shaul and his physician friend, the good doctor Luke, left Philippi on the 22nd day of the first Chodesh or month in the new year. Point number two from Acts 20, verse 6. In 5 days, we joined them at Troas. Now here we learned that the team arrived in the Roman city of Troas in time to join the believing community for the 26th day of the first Chodesh. That 26th day of the first Chodesh, or first month, began their 50-day count of the Omer, which is how the Qumran House of Tzedok priesthood taught their followers, all based on the Book of Jubilees and the Qumran Temple Scroll, which is identified as 11Q19. Point number three, also from Acts 20, verse 6, the text says, we stayed 7 days. Here we learned that the whole Yeshua-believing community of Troas counted the Omer until day 7. And then on that day 7, or the 7th day, which was the weekly Sabbath, they came together to break bread. Point number 4 from Acts chapter 20, verse 7. The text says, now on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread. Here we learned that the English translation from the Greek is distorted. Literally, the Greek text says, now on the one of the Sabbaths, the disciples came together to break bread. This is saying that when the Troas community of believers in Yeshua came together to meet on that second day of the second Chodesh, or the second month, then they began counting the number one of the coming seven weekly Sabbaths. Their counting of the seven Sabbaths was according to Leviticus 23, verse 16. Count 50 days to the day after the seven Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to Jehovah. And finally, my fifth point from Acts 20, verse 7. The text says Paul was ready to depart the next day, and he spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. Now, this tells us that Shaul was ready to leave Troas on the next day. In other words, it was already very late on that Sabbath night, perhaps as late as 2 or 3 in the morning. And yet, the text tells us it was still called the Sabbath and not Sunday morning or the first day of the week. Therefore, this demonstrates to me that their day-to-day counting of biblical time was and is based on a sunrise-to-sunrise reckoning. Now, I'll tell you, this fits with the meaning of the term the next day, which is based on the Hebrew term Mimacharat HaShabbat, which means tomorrow, or the next day when a numbered calendar day advances to the next ascending numbered calendar day. The terminology the next day in Hebrew substantiates a sunrise to sunrise reckoning of biblical time, but does not give any standing to a Pharisaic sunset to sunset reckoning. So this said, let us now continue with Acts chapter 20, verse 9. The text tells us, as Paul continued speaking, he, referring to Eutychus, fell down from the third story loft and was taken up dead. The story says that this young man, Eutychus, began to sink into a deep sleep and was, in fact, overcome by sleep. Then we learn he fell out of the third story or third loft window in that structure, and they found that he was dead. However, I have to say, I think there is likely a lot more going on here in the story because the term sleep is a Hebrew expression for dying or for death. So I want you to ruminate on the following. First, John 11:11-14. These things he, Yeshua, said, and after that he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up." Then his disciples said, "Master, if he sleeps, he will get well." However, Yeshua spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. Therefore, Yeshua said to them plainly, "Eleazar," or Lazarus, "is dead." Now go to Ephesians 5:13-14. "But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore he says, 'Awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Messiah will give you light.'" This tells me that it is possible the young man, Eutychus, may not have actually suffered a death because of his fall from that third loft window. It is more believable and even possible that Eutychus actually died from something else moments before he even fell down from that third story window. because the text says he was already sinking into a, quote, deep sleep, as the narrative explains. So we are not told what it was that really took his life. It may have been the fall, three stories down, or it may have been something else. Regardless, the story is not focused on the death of Eutychus, but instead it is focused on his resurrection, with an emphasis on two different things. The first emphasis is on the concept of a midnight salvation and resurrection, because it says that while Paul was preaching until midnight, that's when this young man, Eutychus, sitting in the windowsill, fell down and died. So it's this midnight idea. Well, in the Bible, midnight is code language for the second or middle watch of three watches in the night, which is about 10 p.m. to about 2 in the morning, maybe even about 3 in the morning. So this second or middle watch of the night is often linked to judgment, to salvation, to resurrection, ideas like that. For example, Genesis chapter 14, verses 14 through 15. Now when Abram heard that his brother, or literally his brother's son, was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, that is, those who kidnapped Lot. Now, this concept that it says he divided his forces against them by night, this is rabbinically understood to be around the second middle watch of the three watches in the night, hence a midnight theme. In other words, the middle of the night. And he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. Let's take a look at Exodus 12, 29 through 30. And it came to pass at midnight, or in the middle of the night, meaning the second or middle watch of the three watches in the night, that Jehovah struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon or the keep, and all the firstborn of livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Let's go to Judges chapter 16, verse 3. And Shimshon, or Samson, lay low until midnight, or until the middle of the night, referring to the second or middle watch of the three watches in the night. And then he arose at midnight. Again, he arose at that second or middle watch of the three watches in the night. He took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two gateposts, pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Let's look at Psalm 119, verse 62. At midnight, in other words, at or during the middle of the night, referring to that second or middle watch of the three watches in the night, I will rise to give thanks to you because of your just or righteous judgments. Let's go to Matthew chapter 25, verse 2. This is the story of the 10 virgins. And at midnight, meaning during the middle of the night, referring to that second or middle watch of the three watches in the night, a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him." So he's coming in the middle watch of these three watches of the night. Let's go now to the book of Acts, chapter 16, verses 25 and 26. "But at midnight," again, at that time, during the middle of the night, referring to that second or middle watch of the three watches in the night, "Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened, and everyone's chains were loosed." So this was the first point that I wanted to make concerning the emphasis on Eutychus and his resurrection. But now let me go to a second point that I want to make concerning Eutychus and his resurrection. And that second point is that the story is a model of the same paradigm that is found in Yeshua's resurrection narrative. You see, for Eutychus, his resurrection happened at about the same time as that of Yeshua, meaning late in the middle or the second watch of three watches of the night, or what was said to be midnight. In other words, both Yeshua and Eutychus were raised in the lateness of Sabbaths, plural, meaning the day was still called Sabbath when the resurrections happened in both cases. In other words, both Yeshua and Eutychus were raised in a resurrection in the lateness of Sabbaths, plural, meaning the day was still called Sabbath in the narrative that we're reading about when these resurrections happened. And I have an example that I can give you from the book of Matthew, or Matityahu, chapter 28, verse 1. This text tells us that Yeshua's resurrection was not after the Sabbath. And that's a very special term that I want to bring to your attention, because it is a big issue in a lot of circles, this idea of after the Sabbath in Matthew 28:1. However, his resurrection was not after the Sabbath, which very much distorts the Greek grammar as it has been transmitted downline to us. Based on some of the very best software parsing tools that I use for deep investigation into Greek grammar, so here is what the textual narrative appears to be saying to me from Matthew chapter 28, verse 1. "Now, late, as a relative lateness regarding a point in time that follows another point in time." Let me repeat myself. Matthew 28, 1, it says, "Now, late," and this idea in Greek of late is referring to a relative lateness in regards to a point in time that follows another point in time. "Now, late, as one of more than one Sabbaths was moving towards or growing towards daybreak." Yeah, that's pretty much what it says. I tried to be very fair with the way I looked at this. I did not torture the verse to make it say what I wanted it to say. It just simply says what it says, and I'm pulling this out from Greek. So let me give it to you again so you can follow with what I'm trying to say here. Again, Matthew 28:1. "Now, late, as a relative lateness regarding a point in time that follows another point in time, as one, meaning one of more than one, Sabbaths. It's a plural word. As one of more than one Sabbaths was moving towards or growing towards daybreak. Miriam of Magdala, or Mary Magdalene, and the other Mary came to see the tomb. Now you may be asking yourself, well, what is that supposed to mean? It says what you probably think it says, that the day was still called the Sabbath, even while the time was still very late in that Sabbath hour, just before the daybreak of the next day, that is, the first day of the week, or Sunday. There's a couple of Sabbaths going on here, and this is the one of more than one of those two Sabbaths that appear to be back-to-back, and it's that Sabbath that's being referred to that is moving toward or growing toward daybreak. That's when all of this stuff is going on in Matthew 28:1. So again, we're learning that the day was still called the Sabbath, even while the time was still very late in that Sabbath hour, just before daybreak of the next day, which would be the first day of the week, Sunday. Now, all of this is very, very important to reflect upon because it has a tremendous impact on how to follow the chronology of Yeshua's last week, beginning with his Passover meal, then when he and his disciples cross the Kidron Valley and he is arrested in the garden, which is then followed by his trial before the Jewish Sanhedrin, which, by the way, was a daylight or daytime trial, not a nighttime or during the night trial, which then all of this is followed by his crucifixion, his death, his burial, and finally, his third day resurrection. Now, if one reads this whole chronology as it is reported across four gospel narratives, it will make no sense. And I mean that. It will make no sense if one tries to understand that whole chronology only through the rabbinic, Pharisaic, lunar festival calendar. Conversely, the whole chronology will only make good sense, and I mean really good sense, when the narratives are seen through the eyes of two different calendars that were in place at the same time. Yeah, they were both happening at the same time, overlaid on top of each other. In other words, what I'm saying to you is that the writers of the gospel narratives present the chronology of Yeshua's Passover, his arrest, his trial, his crucifixion, and his resurrection from both perspectives. That is to say that Yeshua's crucifixion and third day resurrection took place according to a completely different calendar. While all this is going on with Yeshua's last week before his death, burial, and resurrection, there was at the same time another calendar chronology. So between the two different festival calendars, the solar calendar of the House of Tzedok or the Qumran, and the festival lunar calendar of the Pharisees, there was a variance of about 2 days or 48 hours. And this is going to explain all those chronological problems that you read about when you're studying the whole chronology of Yeshua's crucifixion and resurrection story. So stick around for my future podcasts on this very issue. We're going to take a quick break now and then continue on. I'm Avi Ben-Mordechai, and This is Real Israel Talk Radio.
You're listening to Ancient Roads, Real Israel Talk Radio, Program 21, Episode 107.
Welcome back to the podcast of Ancient Roads, Real Israel Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Avi Ben Mordechai.
Welcome back to Real Israel Talk Radio, and I'm Avi Ben Mordechai. Let's continue where we left off just before the break. We were speaking about Matthew 28:1, where the text is giving us an idea that there is a relative lateness going on in this text, and it's not talking about after the Sabbath, meaning the first day of the week or Sunday. It's not talking about that, not according to the Greek text that I'm reading. It's saying this is a relative lateness regarding a point in time that follows another point in time, and it's dealing with one of more than one Sabbaths, plural, kind of like saying two Sabbaths back to back, and this one Sabbath of more than one in the text, this Sabbath was moving toward or growing toward daybreak or sunrise. And it was not yet sunrise. It was still dark, but it's still called Sabbath. And that's when Mary of Magdala, or Miriam of Magdala, and the other Mary came to see the tomb. So we're learning here something about these Sabbaths and the fact that the chronology dealing with Yeshua in his resurrection, that this day was still a Sabbath. Albeit it was a very late Sabbath, but it was still called Sabbath. And it is just before daybreak of the next day, because the next day had not yet happened, not until sunrise, which would then be a demarcation point that says, okay, the dark is behind us, the new light is ahead of us, and this is now the first day of the week, Sunday. So it would begin at sunrise, rather than on what we call Saturday night at sundown. This passage in Matthew 28:1 is not about a sunset to sunset reckoning. So this narrative is expressing that a biblical day is assumed to still be the same day until sunrise the next morning. And it perfectly matches with what took place in the book of Acts chapter 20, verse 9, when Eutychus was raised to life in his resurrection. And this is actually so stunning because of the theological principle that is baked into the story. Listen to this from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 20. But now, Messiah is risen from the dead and has become the Bikurim, that's the Hebrew word for firstborn, of those who have fallen asleep. And it's got me thinking just like Eutychus. So then, we should read these passages to bring more clarity to the Eutychus story. Psalm 145, verses 14 through 16. Jehovah upholds all who fall and raises up all. That's all resurrection talk, folks. He raises up all who are bowed down. The eyes of all look expectantly to you, and you give them their food in due season. You open your hand and satisfy the desire of all the living. That, my friend, is resurrection talk. Let's go to Psalm 27, verse 13. And by the way, this Psalm 27, it's a psalm that is read almost religiously during the festival of Sukkot every year, in Orthodox Jewish circles for sure. Psalm 27, verse 13. I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness or the good of Jehovah in the land of the living. The phrase land of the living is an ancient Hebraic euphemism for the promised last day messianic redemption into what Judaism calls the Olam Haba, that is, the world to come. Let us now continue with this Eutychus resurrection narrative in Acts chapter 20, verse 10. But Paul went down, fell on him, and embracing him, he said, quote, "Do not trouble yourselves, for his life is in him." These are some seriously compelling words from Shaul or Paul. Don't think for a moment that this is telling us about that young man Eutychus. Not at all. Notice Shaul said, "Do not trouble yourselves, for his life is in him." In other words, Messiah Yeshua's life was put into that young man Eutychus because of Yeshua's third day resurrection. And Yeshua taught the principle in precisely that same way. Here it is from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 4. "In him was the life, and the life was the light of men." John or Yochanan 1:9. "That was the true light who gives the light to every man coming into the world." And Colossians 1:27, "Messiah in you, the hope of glory." Well, what is that hope of glory? That is resurrection glory. He is the hope of resurrection glory belonging to us. He's going to give it to us. And therefore, given this teaching that our life is in Messiah, who is our hope of glory, it is based on his third day resurrection, which is why Shaul was able to say so boldly in 1 Corinthians 15:20, "He has become the Bikurim," that is, he has become the firstborn in Jehovah's last day resurrection for those who come to him in the name of Yeshua. And the Hebrew term Bikurim is actually a Shavuot or Feast of Weeks or Pentecost term. What we're reading here is the basis for Paul's teaching theology. Take a look at Philippians 3, 8 through 11, and I have truncated my reading just a bit for the purposes of time. "Yet indeed, I also count all things loss for the excellence of the knowledge of Messiah Yeshua, my master." In Hebrew, the term is Adoni. "That I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, if by any means I may attain to the resurrection from the dead." So, what exactly did Shaul do for the dead young man Eutychus? Well, once again, take a look at Acts 20, verse 10. It tells us that he went down to the young man and he fell on him. He embraced him and he followed the pattern for what took place in the days of Eliyahu or Elijah and Elisha. Here is 2 Kings 4, 32 through 35. "When Elisha or Elisha came into the house, there was the child lying dead on his bed. He went in, therefore, shut the door behind the two of them, and prayed to Jehovah. And he went up and laid on the child, and put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, his hands on his hands, and he stretched himself out on the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. He returned and walked back and forth in the house, and again went up and stretched himself out on him." Then it says the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. Now let's take a look at another resurrection story in 1 Kings 17, 20 through 23, and this concerns Eliyahu or Elijah. "Then he," Eliyahu, "cried out to Jehovah and said, 'Jehovah, my Elohim, have you also brought tragedy on the widow with whom I lodge by killing her son? And he stretched himself out on the child 3 times. And he cried out to Jehovah and said, Jehovah Elohai, I pray, let this child's soul or nephesh come back to him. Then Jehovah heard the voice of Eliyahu, and the soul of the child came back to him, and he revived. He resurrected. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Eliyahu, or Elijah, said, See, your son lives, or your son is now living, because he experienced a resurrection. Let's go on now to the last statement of this Book of Acts resurrection narrative in the Book of Acts 20, verse 11. Now when he, referring to Shaul, had come up, he broke bread and ate and talked a long while, even until daybreak, and then he departed. For Paul and his ministry team, their biblical reckoning for a day was sunrise to sunrise. Daybreak or sunrise carried the meaning of a brand new day, according to 2 Peter 1:19. It reads, And so we have this prophetic word confirmed, which you do well to heed, or shema, as to a light that shines in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts. Well, that sunrise in their calendar week just happened to click over to the next day, which was now day one, Sunday of the coming new week of 6 days until the next Sabbath. It was also day 8 in the 50-day count of the Omer leading up to Shavuot in Jerusalem. It was also week 1 and day 1 towards completing the 7 Sabbaths in the count of the Omer toward Shavuot or Pentecost. And it was also day 3 of month number 2, or Chodesh number 2, the second month, in the counting of the 12 Chodeshim, or 12 months, until the beginning of the next new year. So, this takes us to the Book of Acts, chapter 20, and verse 16. For he, referring to Shaul, or Paul, for he was hurrying to be at Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost, or the day of Shavuot. He was trying to get there with enough time so that he could join the community in Jerusalem for the true Pentecost based on the 364-day calendar year of the house of Tzedok, not according to the Pharisees. So you see, including the morning of their departure from Troas, Paul and his ministry team had 42 days before Shavuot or Pentecost, which of course then terminates on the 15th day of the third month based on the Tzedok calendar of 364 days in a festival year, and all dealing with the Qumran House of Tzedok teachings. For that day, Shavuot will always fall on the 15th day of the third Chodesh, or the third month. It will always fall on a Sunday. But according to the official rabbinic lunar calendar of Jerusalem, surprise, surprise, Shavuot would have already come and gone by the time Paul got there. Yeah, it did, because the official Pharisaic calendar for Shavuot, that already fell about 10 days earlier than when Paul was celebrating it in Jerusalem, meaning the Pharisaic Shavuot fell on the fifth or the sixth day of the third Chodesh or third month, as it's referred to in rabbinic writings as Sivan 5/6, because a day always kicks over to the new day the previous evening. And one more thing that you might find very interesting, after Yeshua's resurrection, which happened according to the Tzedok calendar on the 18th of the first Chodesh or the first month, if you count 40 days from that first day of the week or Sunday morning, when the women were finally there at the tomb and it was light by then, that 40 days will terminate and converge on what is called in Judaism Lag BaOmer, that is the 33rd day of the Omer, which also just happens to be 40 days after Yeshua first began to appear to the whole group of disciples on the first day of the week following his resurrection. And that has tremendous significance because there is a very interesting meaning going on with the 33rd day of the Omer, because even in Jerusalem and all of Israel today, all the Jewish young men and the kids, they all go out and gather wood and they light bonfires in commemoration of the 33rd day of the Omer. And they light these bonfires, and you might ask yourself, well, why are they doing that? Well, it certainly is a good way to get rid of all of your trash and your wood, but there's a reason why they're doing that, and I don't even think they know what it is. But I'll let you in on a little secret from Scripture. Turn to the book of Judges, chapter 13. The father of Shimshon, or Samson, was Manoah. He was given a little visitation from the Mashiach, or Messiah, the Word, who is always identified in Scripture as the messenger or angel of Jehovah. So we read in Judges 13, verses 15 through 21, a story of that visitation, and it concludes with the statement that Manoah took a young goat with a grain offering and offered it upon the rock to Jehovah. And then the text says it happened as the flame went up toward heaven from the altar, the malach or angel of Jehovah ascended in the flame of the altar. Well, this narrative is about Messiah, the Word, who appears to Manoah and his wife, as well as the fact that he was a manifestation of the Word, and he ascended in the flame on the altar. And my assumption is that there was some wood on that altar, because that is the pattern in the Torah at Leviticus 1:7. The sons of Aaron, the Kohen, that's the priests of Tzedok, shall put fire on the altar and lay the wood in order on the fire. Now turn to Acts 1:3. Yeshua presented himself alive after his suffering by many infallible proofs, being seen by them, his disciples, during 40 days, and speaking of the things pertaining to the kingdom of God. Then in Acts 1:9, now when he had spoken these things, while they watched, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight, something like what happened with Manoah in the book of Judges. So from Yeshua's appearance to his disciples in that upper room of Jerusalem, unto his ascension in Acts chapter 1, verse 9, 1, it was 40 days. 2, it was 33 days from the beginning of the count of the Omer, according to the Tzedok calendar, on the 26th day of the first Chodesh or month. 3, it was the Jewish day of Lag BaOmer, or day 33, when even to this very day, bonfires of wood are built all over Jerusalem, even in the Orthodox neighborhoods. So Yeshua ascended into a cloud on day 33 of the Omer, which was also day 40 from his first appearance to his disciples in that upper room after his resurrection. And I'll have to save the rest of what I would like to say for later. The point is, Yeshua did everything according to the Tzedok solar calendar of Qumran and the Book of Jubilees, as well as the Dead Sea Scrolls 11Q19, the Temple Scroll. We can see from Yeshua's resurrection, there is a tremendous significance to that as it is tied together with going through the waters of the Yam Suf or the Red Sea in the book of Exodus chapter 14 and 15. But we'll save that for another time, okay? So I want to thank you for joining me for this episode of the Qumran House of Tzedok teaching on the solar calendar and the chronologies that are going on between that calendar and Yeshua's death and resurrection. And we're going to come back on the next podcast because I want to continue to take a look at some additional New Covenant texts and narratives demonstrating that Yeshua and his disciples observed and taught the principles of the House of Tzedok 364-day solar calendar. And of course, based on my research and my understanding, Yeshua and his disciples did not submit to the Pharisaic authorities of Jerusalem, nor to their Sanhedrin, nor to their calendar, nor to their sunset-to-sunset day reckoning, none of that. Yeshua and his disciples considered them and all the priesthood of the Second Temple period as self-appointed to be over all Israel as teachers and interpreters of the Mosaic written law, collectively referred to as the Torah. Furthermore, Yeshua and his disciples did not even submit to the high priestly judges among the Sadducees, which included the high priests of the House of Katros and the House of Bitus, also called the Bothusians in the New Covenant scriptures. These Second Temple priests were very much considered usurpers of the true Jehovah-ordained priesthood authority of Tzedok, coming down line through the family of Aaron, the brother of Moses. And Yeshua's run-ins with those temple priests of his day was simply because he did not consider them legitimate. For example, in John 18, 19 through 23, the high priest then asked Yeshua about his disciples and his doctrine. Yeshua answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Judeans always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me and what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Yeshua with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Yeshua answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Reflecting on this, here is a work from the ancient Jewish writings of Pesachim 57a of the Talmud. "Woe is me due to the high priests of the House of Bitos, or the Betusim. Woe is me due to their clubs. Woe is me due to the high priests of the House of Hanin. Woe is me due to their whispers and the rumors they spread. Woe to me due to the high priests of the House of Katros. Woe to me due to their pens that they use to write lies. Woe is me due to the servants of the high priests of the House of Ishmael ben Piachi. Woe to me due to their fists." And there are other passages like this to explain what was going on in the days of Yeshua. If you have any questions or comments about any of these programs, navigate over to our website at www.cominghome.co.il. I'm Avi Ben-Mordechai, and this is Real Israel Talk Radio.